Hear that? It's the sound of ATM fees taking a bite of the things you buy with your cash. Luckily, with a TD Unlimited checking account, you pay no TD fee at any ATM in Canada. Open an account today. TD, ready for you. You may pay a fee to a non-TD ATM provider.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Books. Today is March 15th, 2012, and thank you, readers and writers, for tuning in today to the show. This is Nancy Pesky calling in from Wisconsin, where it's going to be 80 degrees today. Yay! And my co-host Stephanie Gunning is here from New York City. Can you top 80 degrees?
No, we had 70 yesterday, but today when I went outside to run an errand, it was 45. So God only knows what's going on here. I haven't been out today, you know, since then. It looks overcast. We're, you know, I'm good easing into spring. 80 would be like a shock to my nervous system. I don't think I'd be able to write. I'd want to run away.
Yeah, I did find some excuses. Oh, you know, I really think I have to go to the post office today. No, I can't send my husband. No, I think I have to walk there. Yeah.
No, because God knows he wouldn't do the. He wouldn't get the right stamps.
Yeah, so it was wonderful. We had all the windows open, and, you know, you forget how different it feels in a physical space when you have all the windows open and you've got outdoor air circulating inside, changing your electromagnetic field. So it was good because I had to do branding with a client yesterday. So I had all of that creative energy of the crocuses blooming and the daffodils coming up. So we had a great branding session.
So when you brand with a writing client, what exactly are you doing with them?
Well, the first thing I get to is, what is it that you want to teach people? What do you want to bring to the world? And how did you come to the place you're at? In other words, what's your personal story behind this? So I know where their motivation is coming from, and it helps me figure out who it is they want to connect to and what problems they want to solve.
I love it. So you do this with people who are, they have a book idea, but it's not really evolved yet, it sounds like.
Yeah, a book idea or two or three. And they know basically generally what they want to talk about, but they don't have a brand yet. They haven't. They may have reserved a few website URLs, but they haven't really zeroed in on what they're doing. Or they have, but they don't have a nice, clever hook for it, and they don't know, do I go beyond just having a little blog that I put up last week? Do I have a website? Do I need Facebook? All of that. So we talk about that, and I talk about how to build a community based on what you're trying to put out there. You know, are you trying to reach business people? Are you trying to reach creative artists? Are you trying to reach mothers? So we talk through all of those ideas, and then we start throwing fun terms around. We look up words on Wikipedia, on the thesaurus, and we do Google searches and Amazon searches, and we come up with combinations of words and plays on words to start honing in on what do we want to have your brand be.
Yeah, I think that's really fun, and I love the fact that you can do it with wordplay the way you're describing, because sometimes when you look up a word, your mind really opens. You know, some words feel delightful, and some words are just wrong, you know.
Right, and we were saying yesterday that innovation is the business word for creativity. You know, when you say innovation, you just think a guy in a suit, right? Creativity is
actually, I would beg to differ. I mean, I can see why business people use it. Innovation to me means that it's something new.
Mm-hmm.
And it's,
well, it comes from the Latin
creativity
word for
to me could be something old, but you're creating it.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. So we were throwing, you know, we'd go to the thesaurus and we'd say, oh yeah, that word doesn't work, and then you try to think of like fun sayings that you can do a twist on, you know, and contrast. Can you put two words together that people say, oh, that's odd? Emotional intelligence. Remember that book, you know?
Right.
Just two words that when next to each other really are
they
provocative.
Pop, like Urban Zen. I always liked that.
Yeah,
Urban
that's
Zen
great
is
one.
A company, and I, you know, it's like, okay. You know, rural Zen doesn't have the same feeling because you're like, yeah. We're hanging out with some cows meditating.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Urban Zen is like, ooh, fast-paced, high life, but very focused and, you know, calm.
Yeah, and then, of course, there are words that are more generational, that resonate more for a generation, or sayings that resonate for a generation. I know that in cinema therapy, my cousin and I love to use the word gal because our moms always used it. And I really suspect that anyone under 40 today thinks that's just the weirdest word. But it meant something at one point, you know?
Right.
Word gal.
Right. You know, I get it, like guys and gals. You know, I see what you're saying. I use the similar process, but I call it positioning.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, positioning is a little bit different. It's it's not so much a brand in that, or it might be more project oriented, is what I'm trying to say. But one of the questions that I like to ask my clients is, in regard to this project or this stretch of time in your activities, who do you want to be for this targeted customer or client or reader? You know, and where would you be if you were that person? So, you know, the hope is that the person I asked that question will get an image in their head like, I would like to be the nutritionist on the Today Show because I'm the go-to person for, you know, everyday information about, you know, healthy, you know, lifestyles or what, you know, something like that, you know. And then the picture itself seems to draw people clearer and clearer to the definition. Because if you, you know, if creativity or innovation, it could be all over the map. So how is anybody even going to know you or find you? So I'm also like forward thinking into the relationship that they're going to have with somebody from that book that they're doing. And I'm always looking at it through books. I mean, somebody last week was trying to get me to coach a client of theirs on her creative process in writing. And I was like, no, I must have said no like 10 times. And it was really sweet. She kept coming back to me. And I was like, I really don't do that. I really don't do that. I have no interest in doing that. If they're not writing a book, I'm not going there with them. You know, if she decides to write a book, have her call me, you know.
Oh, what was she writing? She was just writing blog pieces?
She was somebody who has actually got, when she does write, she has a nice voice, and her coach recognized this, and so she thought it could be cultivated and developed more, and then that would lead her to blogging and ultimately lead her maybe to a book, but she didn't have the confidence and she wanted someone to advise her. And certainly I could have charged this woman money and she would have paid it for that kind of coaching. But for me, it would never have felt rewarding because it would never have led to something that I can. I'm all about producing a tangible, you know, product at the end of the day. You know.
Well, and to me, writing is so much about you connecting with an audience for a particular purpose, whether it's entertainment or in a certain type of entertainment. Maybe you want to make them laugh. Maybe you want to make them feel heard. Whatever it is, so when it's so open-ended, I want to write. I'm not sure I would know what to do with that either. I need a little more structure or parameters for,
well,
you
it
know,
feels
why
good to write.
And
I mean, it feels good to write. You know, people feel good when they begin to express themselves and they begin to interact with their own thoughts on paper. I get it. I do that every day, you know. I mean, I was a person who journaled from a very young age, and it's a very healing practice as well. And in fact, sometimes when I teach a writing workshop, I'm doing some kind of what I almost call destiny writing. I'm having people think their way into what they value and how they want the future to look and all that kind of stuff, and how to heal the wounds of the past and all that kind of stuff. But it's not what I do professionally. So,
mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I've been, so you've been branding. I've been editing and writing book proposals. I've turned into a factory. And, in fact, my new proposal class starts this afternoon. So if anybody's listening and they want to jump on it and have a proposal 5 weeks from now, today we begin. That's the intensive. You can find a link to that at stephaniegunning.com/courses with an S on the end. And, yep. Cool.
Well, this is a good time for people to be putting their proposals together. And, you know, we've kind of cleared away the old with, you know, the old weather and kind of the whole holiday thing. And yet we haven't gone into summer and people taking vacations again. So this is really a good time to be putting it together and getting it out there.
Yeah, if you sell it before the summer, you can really write it
mm-hmm.
by the end of the year or get deeply into it, you know. Well, should we bring on our guest?
Yes. Would you like to introduce her?
Sure, I'll do it. We're being joined today by Charlene Proctor. She is an author, a minister, blessing giver, and empowerment coach, and the author of a new book, which is, I'm not sure if it's come out yet. It's about to. It's called The Oneness Gospel. And let me just see. I want to see what her subtitle is. Birthing the Christ Consciousness and Divine Human in You. And this is a self-help personal growth book with both Eastern and Western approach to it. Charlene is an ordained minister of spiritual peacemaking and a Diksha facilitator trained by the Oneness Guides from Fiji and India. She's the best-selling author of an earlier book called Let Your Goddess Grow. She's from the Midwest. Her sensibility and spiritual approach to self-empowerment has helped thousands of people awaken to the divine magnificence within them. She answers the question, what will empower us and sustain our relationships in the new age? And in this eye-opening, deeply spiritual book, she aims to unite the diverse spiritual wisdom from East and West to help readers experience Christ consciousness in the here and now, combining the oneness teachings of India with a fresh look at the New Testament. Charlene gives profound and practical advice on how to know the self. So welcome, Charlene. How are you today?
I'm good, and thank you so much for having me to come on and talk about creative process and maybe the writing process. But, Stephanie, I remember talking to you years ago on the phone about my last book. No, it was two books ago, right?
Wow.
You were with the Ford Agency. Weren't you?
No, I never worked for Ariel. I was the editor of a couple of her anthologies. Yes.
Yes. And I remember, oh my gosh, it was so long ago. And the book was being put together and we had submitted it for proposals and so forth. And I talked to Ariel on the phone and she said, oh, I'm going to put you in touch with Stephanie. And I remember talking to you about
the wonderful
book. Yeah, so when I saw the sheet on the media tour and I said, oh my gosh, I remember her, and I remember our conversation to be very positive and informative, and what was really great about you is you took the time to look at all the positive aspects of the book from both a marketing perspective and a writer perspective and subject perspective and so forth. And so anyway, here we are again.
Terrific. Well, glad to re-meet you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today, and I hope I can deliver some info for everybody. So here we go.
Yeah, terrific. So tell us a little bit about your book. How did you come up with the idea for the Oneness Gospel?
Well, about 3 years ago, I was very interested in finding a way to release pain and suffering that had kind of resided in my body. You know, after people, and this is certainly true with, you see the vets coming back and other people have experienced a lot of emotional trauma in their lives, and it actually just makes us physically ill. And I had experienced some personal suffering in our family, and I found myself gradually getting more physically ill. I had developed some cancer and a back injury and a variety of other things, and these ailments were fairly serious. And so I heard about, through a friend, somebody who had been giving this blessing or this Diksha, and that it had some healing properties to it. So by going to some of these workshops and seminars and prayer sessions and so forth, I learned more about the oneness community in India and the oneness teaching. So I became very interested in what the oneness movement was that was emanating from India. And so I went out there to see what it was all about after I read and had actually experienced the blessing, which had begun to have a positive effect on me physically. And since I'm a writer by nature and a researcher, I thought, you know, these teachings were very, very congruent with the teachings of the New Testament. And they're very simple and they're interfaith and universal in nature. And especially today, we live in such a polarized society. I think that anything we can do that's unity-oriented and that has something to do with healing and personal transformation is a very exciting subject. So that's originally how I was led to this material.
Now, I know that in the book you talk about 12 principles for becoming a divine human. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Now you're jumping right to the end of the book.
Oh, is that at the end?
It's at the very end to kind of sum everything up.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. The 12 principles were interesting. And after you write a book, and this book is, 365 pages long. And in the writing, and I will take a little side note here, is I tried to keep this very interfaith. So anything that's a citation from Bible or the Bhagavad Gita or Upanishads or anything like that, I stuck them in the footnotes. And the reason is because I think people, readers, and I know I'm a typical reader, when I see all of this stuff in the main part of the text, it kind of gets a little overwhelming, right? So I wanted to just put that in a spot where people could say, yeah, if I want a little bit more confirmation or a little more backup or a little more oomph in terms of where this idea or thought process originated from, I can go to the footnotes. So the book is very, very clean in that way. But I thought that since the book was so long, it would be good to try to sum up at the end with these 12 principles about what is the meat of what we're talking about. If you took all of these teachings and everything I had learned the last 3 years from the Oneness group and all of the Dasas, which are monks, that's what a Dasa is in India, and sometimes you call them Dasajis, and Ji is like the mark of respect. So you learn all of this stuff from the Dasajis and write this book. And what can we give people at the end that kind of sum up, in a nutshell, 12 little steps that remind them of the substance of the teaching? And that's what the 12 principles are.
Got it. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So I can go that through them. And, yeah, but it's such a reward because it's like, oh, I got through the whole book, and now I'm like, well, here's my little footnote or my post-it note I can cut out and stick on my bathroom mirror every day and go, oh, yeah, I remember that. And if I can deploy that idea in my life today, if I can take a little piece of that and put it to work, then that gets me one step closer to spiritual growth.
Got it. So the book itself addresses suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And why are you finding that people are open to this kind of spiritual conversation?
I know you're. We were talking about this before the show, Nancy and I. We know you're on the radio, the mainstream radio. We know that you've been on Lifetime Television. We're fascinated by whether or not people really will embrace this.
I think suffering is a really timely topic. And actually, what's kind of funny and endearing is when you go to India, they have this big viewpoint of people in the West, and they do this in a loving way, really. They say that people in the West are the greatest, most wonderful suffering managers on the planet. We don't experience our suffering. We are not willing to look at our suffering and to be with it and experience it wholeheartedly, emotionally, to embrace life as a personal growth process and really take that piece of suffering and look at it, examine it, and push through it. So what they're telling us, Westerners that migrate out there by the droves looking for help for all kinds of issues, is that the first thing you have to do is really take a look at your suffering and be willing to move through it. That involves a willingness to release our past and really understand what it's like to live in the present moment. So they have all of these different practices, and I talk about that in the book, about how we can look at our personal suffering. Some of them are mystical processes, which are truly amazing. And, you know, I'm kind of a left-brainer by nature. I mean, my background is research, and I'm kind of a logical person. And so I always look at this stuff with a really open mind. And I didn't go out there looking for some mystical experience that was going to scrub all of my deepest suffering out. But I did, in fact, experience that. People in the West are letting their life be run by their mind. And what we mean by that is that they're living with old programming, old conditioning. We're either thinking about the past or we're jumping to the future, and we're not willing to just be with the present moment. And for me, personally, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of these emotional charges and bad memories that get stuck in these energy layers in our body. They're called koshas. I learned all this in India. And they kind of manifest and they fester into disease. The other thing that I think is timely about the subject of suffering and people in the West and why they're willing to embrace some new thoughts to overcome it is that the people in India say that all suffering originates in this belief in separation. So instead of connecting with this big idea about being part of the divine unity or being part of the all, which encompasses every living thing in the entire universe, we see ourselves as separate. And what they're teaching is that until we let go of that idea and that old story, which is our belief in separation from God or from the good or consciousness or however you would define that in your own wisdom tradition, we can't really live a life of harmony and joy. So maybe, now that I think about it, looking at that subject of suffering, like you said, I just think it's really timely. It's like, you know, we get so many books out there. Oh, here's the 12 steps to figuring that and the 4 steps to, you know, accomplishing this. Maybe it's a little bit simpler. Maybe we need to start from the beginning, you know, and really learn how to embrace life in all of its junk and goodness. Once we kind of get that idea, I think we can begin to awaken. Yeah,
you know, it occurred to me yesterday that, and I've had this thought before, but it really landed, was if I'm willing to feel what I'm feeling, I can do anything. I can make any choice, you know, whether it scares me or I'm sad or, you know, I think underlying a lot of the lifestyle behavior that we have in our culture, we have so much stimulation. We have the opportunity to turn our feelings off with television, alcohol, you know, relationships,
that
constant
is, yeah,
stimulation.
That is the whole thing that the East, well, the India East is teaching us is that, like I said, we're experts at the suffering management. We stuff it. We go to therapy. We eat, drink, complain. We get mad at our families. We run away or we watch TV. We shop. You know, we look for love in the wrong places, and we're not facing the suffering head on and allowing it to fill us, like you said, and feel it and stay with that pain until it passes. Because, and I learned this, is that until we're willing to move through it, you have to experience it. So just stuffing a terrible trauma or a memory doesn't really help us. It just makes us ill, and it prevents us from experiencing life. So
that can be very frightening, though, don't you think? I
oh,
mean, when the feelings flood you, it doesn't feel like it's going to end.
No, it doesn't. And it was really, really interesting because I went out there several times and also to Fiji twice because they were teaching this and it was a little closer than India. I don't know if you've ever been out to India. But
I don't think I could find Fiji on the map,
to
be honest with you.
It is so far. It is a long trip. It takes a while to get to Frankfurt, and it just is a huge trip. Plus, when you get to Chennai, then the third world is kind of shocking for us. I mean, it was an education in itself as a researcher and a writer to go out there and to be in the poorest area of this country and see how little people live on and how full they have to be inside from a spiritual perspective to be productive. To go out there and to have a group of people who understand this, who are, I think, a little bit more awakened. I mean, that's what the group of people out there were teaching at the time, to how to move through these dark night of the soul or whatever we want to call it, move through it in an environment where you feel safe to do so and to be pumping this energy into you. They're all like little channels for grace, which is really just the holy presence of God. And it was a hugely healing experience for me in many ways, and I wanted to share that with people and to let them know that there is so much more out there than what we realize. There's so much. And to not be afraid to face the pain head on and to ask for help, and it will be provided. It'll be provided for you. It'll come.
It sounds like you were very inspired by getting out of your regular routine and traveling and seeing other people's lives, that actually stimulated your creative process.
Well, I think curiosity, yeah. I'm a curious person. I want to know. I look at something and I go, okay, well, I kind of wrote the self-help books, and those were totally wonderful. I actually wrote about the Divine Mother and the Goddess and some feminist spirituality thing, and I sunk myself into that material for a long time. But if you're a teacher and you want to teach people something about themselves and about spirituality, you have to keep on digging and look at it from many different angles, just like we live life. And I, at some point, having been with this oneness community and the different DASs and so forth on the stateside, and also different people who were outside of the oneness temple or oneness university environment, like Saima Lakshmi Devi. She is not affiliated with them, but she has been an Indian teacher here in the States, mostly in Colorado, although she travels all over the world. Learned a lot from her, and I experienced darshan and diksha and many of the teachings with Maya Amritanandamayi. You know her. She is the lady that we call the hugging saint.
Mm-hmm.
She gives hugs and treats her.
Yeah.
And she's really an interesting teacher, too. But to go there and to submerge yourself into this for a month is a whole different experience because you can't run away. That's it. You're there. You're sunk into the material. You can't be Facebooking and Twittering and calling and emailing. I mean, you are pretty much with it, in it, and you're there to learn something about yourself. And I found these experiences to be intriguing, and they were different for everyone. I think the people that showed up with the smallest agenda were the ones who got the most out of it, and I certainly did not expect going out there to study with these folks any kind of mystical experience or, you know, I know people in the West are always looking for psychic things and, you know, miracle healings and so forth, and I never expected any of that, but it happened, and I think it's because I just surrendered to the process, and that's kind of my MO when it comes to writing, too. Sit down to write a book, and how are you going to download it from the matrix? You know, how is it supposed to come into you? And when we let go a little bit and stop fighting the flow, that's how I think we get a good book. And I'm really hoping that people respond to this one, which is
well. I hate to tell you this, but we're actually at the end of our time.
I'm sorry.
I'm fascinated listening to you. You're very interesting. I want to remind people that they can go and find out more about this at your website, which is called theonenessgospel.com, or on your personal website, charleneproctor.com, and that information's on the screen as well.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for joining us. What day does your book actually release?
We are launching on April 24th, and if you go to theonenessgospel.com, there's a page there that says free gifts when you buy the book, and
mm-hmm.
a beautiful book trailer. I can learn a little bit about it very, very quickly. And they can register there for a launch reminder. So we'll remind them that the book comes out on April 24th, and we hope that they will support it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to reading your book, and I hope you stay in touch.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks, Charlene.
Great. Bye.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Finding your way to the information you need, it matters more than ever before. Online, on radio, on TV, Global News, navigate the now.